The human spirit is unconquerable. We are individuals and we are sovereign, born with unlimited potential, gifted from our creator. Our mission is to break free from the systems that bind us.
I volunteer as tribute.
We strive for peace and prosperity and overcome all challenges, roadblocks, and obstacles. We are empowered because we think for ourselves and we act for ourselves. We are self-reliant and independent, but guided by the wisdom of those who share our values.
What possible difference can I make?
There is no government, no ruler, nor ideas that are able to stop us. We are driven to succeed because we seek political freedom, financial freedom, and spiritual freedom.
It's all for nothing if you don't have freedom.
This is Mike Corbell, and you are listening to The Invictus Mind.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of The Invictus Mind. This is, of course, your host, Mike Corbell. I have a great episode for you today. It's not just a solo episode, and it's not just a recording of myself as a guest on another show, but I had a real good conversation that I think needs to be shared. I reached out to Adam Patrick from the You're Talking Over Me podcast, and he and I spent some time discussing a little bit about his background in the restaurant industry and how the COVID lockdowns helped him make an important transition in his life. After that, we discussed how the last year and a half has made many people look at things differently than they might have if the world did not change in 2020. Adam is a good guy, and I think after having this conversation with him, I have learned a little more about how to deal with some people in this crazy world we live in. In this episode, we identify the need for people to humble themselves and not only listen to each other more than we do, but also to be able to ask the right questions, but be careful who we let influence our decision-making. I really enjoyed this conversation, and I think you will too. But before we get started, I wanted to just take a second and bring up my favorite online community once again. Check out the Nomad Network. It's a community for liberty-minded entrepreneurs where the members share the strategies, tactics, and connections to spark massive growth in business and help build and develop branding and marketing skills that truly set the standard for excellence, where they focus on investment and not politics to achieve liberty and prosperity. You know, this is a new community, and especially this month, I want to help it grow. I want to help attract the right people that will benefit the most from it, but also want to be able to attract people who can contribute the most so everyone shares an increasement in their personal value and the value of others. So if you haven't already checked it out, then go to www.nomadnetwork.app. It's free to join, and we are definitely looking to make this the premier network in this space. All right, well, I don't have any other promotions at this moment for you all, so I guess we can just continue with the show. Coming up next is my conversation with Adam Patrick. Well, hello, everyone. This is another episode of The Invictus Mind. I'm sitting here with Adam Patrick. How you doing, Adam?
What's up, man? Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're quite welcome. You know, I want to give you a chance to introduce yourself, but before I do that, I want to throw out a couple reasons why I invited you on my show. I know that there's like a million different podcasts out there, but you and I have been floating around the same podcast bubble for quite some time. And if I didn't invite you on the show, you know, I'm sure that somebody sooner or later would have me say, why didn't you get Adam on? Because you guys talk about the same kind of stuff. So,
well, that's a lot of pressure. I guess I don't really know where I fit into this whole thing because, you know, when I started doing You're Talking Over Me, it was really just, you know, how can I connect with the people that I want to talk to kind of grow myself and learn from them. And I saw this as a natural sort of avenue to do that. And then people listen and react to it and say that it's positively affecting their lives, which is awesome. That wasn't my intention. And I really appreciate that. And for them to stick around long enough to kind of hear my story and internalize it into their story is very humbling. I definitely like that. You know, I hope I can contribute to what other people are doing with their own content in my own way. So yeah, no, man, I think it's cool. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. You know, I think I first heard you on Free Man Beyond the Wall, Pete's show, and then you were on Mark Clary's show, and you were on Tommy's show a couple of times. And Tommy's actually my number one guest here. Him and I have done probably the most podcasts together of any other guests I've done here. And so got to be honest, and this is not directed towards you, but I haven't heard much of your show, and I'm probably going to blame Stitcher because, you know, I've been listening to podcasts for years. I'm always using the Stitcher app. And for the love of me, I just cannot pull up your show in the search menu. And it's like three or four other shows out there that I can't pull up. So I don't want to be downloading a bunch of different websites all the time. So, you know, you're going to have to kind of share with me a little bit about your background that way. So,
sure. You know, I had that same issue. The Paul's to the Walls fellas said the same thing. And I'd never even heard of Stitcher, but the Libsyn is supposed to do that automatically. And I checked it and it does exist. I could only find it when I entered it into like an actual search bar on a website. But it, of course, is up on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, you know, all that stuff too. But as far as what I do, I started like kind of like I said, I started this with, you know, this awakening a lot of us have gone through, you know, through the COVID era, right? 2019, 2020, into kind of questioning, okay, I've called myself a libertarian, I've called myself an anarcho-capitalist, a lot of different titles that I've used or learned over the years. And I started to wonder when I was looking at what was happening around me, why I spent so much time talking about those ideas and not so much not doing anything about them because, you know, I'm a serial entrepreneur anyway. So I kind of always worked for myself, or even if I worked for other people, we were always pretty horizontally aligned. But looking at the world and saying like, why did this not take off? Right? Was it, you know, us in this space, we weren't advertising it or marketing it well? You know, is it just not a marketable idea? You know, liberty and freedom? It seems like it is. It seems like this country was built on those ideas. And so I kind of wanted to explore that a little bit. And my thought with that is, you know, how could I expand on it with religion and culture and spirituality and kind of work myself back to like, how did this happen? How did we get through 2019, 2020, this whole COVID crazy stuff, the whole woke culture? Like, how did this happen? Is it an anomaly? Is it the result of something that I was doing or we were doing? And just start working backward until I could find answers for it. Mm-hmm. And I always said, you know, the show is not designed to make me popular. It's not designed to make me money. It's really just a forum where I could have conversations with people. And I've had a lot of conversations with people outside of this, whether it's on their shows or just on the phone, you know, or in like Signal groups or Telegram groups where I've learned a lot. And I do feel like at some point this probably will run its course and I'll have to do something else if I want to, you know, stay in podcasting or radio or whatever. But I am like looking for an ultimate answer. And that's why I started doing it. That's why I started having conversations. And I feel like that's actually happened in a lot of ways. So, you know, the show is about talking to people about all of that, like just asking questions, seeing what their viewpoints are on culture, society, economics, politics. Many different people have many different ways of praxis, right? Of working through theory in reality. And I wanted to explore all of that. I wanted to give everybody their fair shake. And so that's where I'm at. That's what I'm trying to do. And that's what I'm sure I'll continue to do talking to you and your audience.
Well, awesome. Yeah. On your website, it says that your show is the intersection of the material and the mystical, logic and magic, breaking down the philosophy and practice of individual liberty and economic freedom. And so as I read that, I'm thinking to myself, well, why haven't I listened to this show for the last year and a half? And so once again, I'm a blade stitcher because, you know, here on the Invictus Mind, I kind of model myself about the same thing. And I don't want to be like every other 10,000 libertarian podcast out there, but I talk about my background is in financial services. So I talk a lot about financial freedom in my show. And incorporated in that is also entrepreneurism. But I also I like to talk about religious freedom, and I also like to talk just about political freedom. And I think, Adam, one of the first things why I wanted to have you on the show is just because I think you and I share a lot of the same background professionally. Now, correct me if I'm wrong on this. You were either a restaurant owner or a restaurant manager for quite some time?
Oh, yeah, the whole thing. Yeah, okay. 17, almost 18 years in the 17 years in the restaurant industry after I got out of the military. basically lied my way into it, forged a resume, backed it up like fucking awesomely. Yeah. And basically owned, operated, managed corporate restaurants, cocktail bars, clubs, you know, barbecue restaurant, like you name it, to the point where, you know, I achieved every goal I wanted to achieve. I hit all the metrics I wanted to achieve. And, you know, I was always going to be out by the time I was 40 anyway. And I used to tell people, you know, like, I'm going to be out and I'm either going to be doing something really cool or I'm going to be living homeless on a beach somewhere, but I'm not doing it anymore after 40. Sure. And, you know, heaven sent, here comes this COVID nightmare. And it just provided the little spark under that I needed to remind me that that was my ultimate goal. But yeah, no, restaurant industry for sure. Certainly made my bones there. Certainly learned how to talk to people there, how to, you know, run a business there. And then various side hustles over the years that have been mostly successful.
Well, so my wife has been in the restaurant industry for like 17 years, about the same time as you. And her brother was in the restaurant industry. I worked in restaurants. I did DoorDash for a little while. So I work with restaurants. And then my brother is actually studying to be a chef and he wants to get into restaurants. And so I remember from my business school that as far as business goes, there's lots of hard things to do in business. But in my opinion, the restaurant industry is probably the hardest business that you can actually get into. And if you're successful in a restaurant business, then you probably can do anything at that point.
Yeah. You know, I that last part I used to say all the time. Now I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure you could do anything. I think it does. Here's what the restaurant industry is. It has to be a lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And you know, if you're selling cars or you work for a bank, like that doesn't have to be your lifestyle. You can make it that way. You can make everything about, I don't know, hanging out in banks after hours or whatever. But if you're in the hospitality industry and especially restaurants, like aside from hotel management, if you're in restaurants or bars, you're owning and operating or you're managing or you're just tending bar or you're waiting tables or you're cooking in the kitchen or you're a chef, it tends to be everything you do and the entire encompassment of, is that a word? Encompassing of your life, right? So a lot of relationships break down. A lot of people end up in like substance abuse problems or alcohol abuse specifically. A lot of indulgences, too much eating, you know, too many late hours. And it becomes like, okay, when my work day, quote unquote, when I decide my work day is over, who are my friends? All of my friends are restaurant people. Mm-hmm. So in order to associate or socialize with anybody, in order to have some kind of social life, I'm usually either visiting them at their restaurant or bar, or we're getting together and we're going someplace neutral to, you know, meet somebody else who's working there. It becomes your entire life. And I'm sure that you could work out a balance where that wasn't the case, but, and maybe more so now, maybe more so it's going to become a little bit less of a lifestyle and more professional, but that's not how historically it's been. And, you know, I don't know if that's good or bad. It's just what it was. I got caught up in it. Almost everybody I know got caught up in that. And, you know, at some point I had to like check myself and say, like, I'm not, you know, my life isn't defined by this industry, by what I do. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I don't know, post COVID, I'm hoping that the restaurateurs or hospitality professionals that I'm seeing opening new businesses or moving into this space are not living in 2018 or 2019, that they're adapting and growing to a new reality in that space. But that's not really what I'm seeing. I'm seeing a lot of people who are taking real estate opportunities, financial opportunities. They're seeing a bunch of places close down and they want to capitalize on the revenue they could get, thinking they're living 2 years ago, 3 years ago. I didn't want to be part of that world. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's going to work. I think the people who are going to be massively successful moving forward are working with cloud kitchens. They're working with a lot of to-go. They're streamlining orders. They're lessening their front of house staff. They're learning to work more themselves. So I don't know. You know, 10 years ago, I would have talked people out of getting into this. I feel like I'm still doing that, which maybe is why my consulting business never really turned me into a millionaire, because 80% of the people I would talk to, I would tell them that they're not right for this and they shouldn't do it. And, you know, some of them still paid me anyway. So I suppose it wasn't a total loss.
Right. Right. Yeah. I remember, I'm dating myself now. It's almost 20 years ago. I was actually a bartender for a while. And you're right. It is a lifestyle. You know, you work all night and then, you know, you can mix in with the wrong crowd if there is such a thing as that. But, you know, as a bartender, you know, we work and we close the restaurant at 1 o'clock in the morning when everyone else is finally going to sleep. But even on a Friday night, you know, people are all already drunk at that point in time. So like, you're not going to hang out with anybody. But then the bartenders be like, okay, well, we want our social time now. So like, we mm-hmm. went to places that were open till 4 a.m. There was always the bartender's bar that you would go to. And it's like, okay, I don't necessarily want to be going out Friday night and Saturday night till 4 o'clock in the morning and hungover all the next day and everything. So it's just like, I can't deal with that. And my wife, like I said, she's been a waitress for a long time. And, you know, her and I are always having conversations about Friday nights, Saturday night. This is when people go out and hang out, but you're out there working. What am I doing? You know? So, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I knew one guy when I worked in Seattle, one guy who managed family life, a wife, kids, really had a balance, and he had to work towards that. He got to a high level management job where he could, you know, kind of set his own hours. So you have to get to that point and then you have to hold yourself to it. Right. Then it becomes about personal responsibility. Mm-hmm. He was the only person I've really seen be able to do that when he was left to his own devices. Like, I didn't do it well. You know, if anything, I did it like the wrong way the whole time. But you kind of feel like it's not so much that you have to, but you want to, like, you want to be part of a community. You want to have fun. And it just so happens that your fun comes at the time where, like, the rest of the world, you know, isn't having fun. And when they're having fun, you're working. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like, none of us go to a bank to hang out at midnight. Right. But they're going to come and hang out with you when you're working. I'm not going to go chill there and chat with them. So, you know, on holidays, weekends, all the time, the rest of the planet is relaxing, you're working. So there's like this natural drive, or maybe capitalistic drive, to, you know, try to be normal. And so you end up around people who do what you do. And also, I don't think a lot of people talk about this, but you're dealing with, if you're working behind a bar specifically, or if you're working in a bar centric restaurant, you're dealing with like hammered people all the time. And that can either super frustrate you, or you can just give in and also drink, because it makes you more tolerant of their craziness. Mm-hmm. And I think that's how people kind of get down that path. Like, you might not do it while you're working, but afterward you're like, dude, I need a bourbon. I need a beer. I need to chill, talk to my homies. You know, next thing you know, it's 6 o'clock in the morning and the cleaning lady's coming in and you're like, shit, you know, like, I have a girlfriend at home. Like, I got to go do that. So a lot of people end up in relationships with other hospitality professionals who are doing the same thing they're doing to cope. And that's not really a healthy place, you know? So it's not like you can't not do that, but the incentive to do it is pretty strong.
Sure. Sure. Now, you mentioned that you had a goal that you wanted to get out of the restaurant industry, by the time you were 40. And I heard you on another podcast, obviously COVID kind of, either accelerated that, or, I mean, I don't know, did it disrupt your plans in any way?
Disrupt? No, definitely accelerated my plans. You know, as painful as this is to say, because a lot of people, well, probably most people were negatively affected by COVID. You know, I don't know if I just reacted well or kind of saw it early. I mean, that is true. But maybe lucked out a little bit too, where it actually ended up being the last couple of years were probably the most blessed that I've personally lived in my life, amongst the most blessed anyway. And, you know, some of that is being older. Some of that is having some life experience. Some of that is making huge mistakes in the past and learning how to grow from them. So it was good timing. You know, I don't know if COVID had happened in like 2012. If I would have been in the same place. So, you know, a lot of it's luck, but no, it's been an incredibly fruitful and blessed couple of years for me. Like I said, it's tough to share that because I know that's not the general sentiment, like, around the country and around the world. I'd always said I would get out. Like, I don't know what I was actually planning to do with that sentiment. like I wasn't working toward anything, and maybe just socking money away, but certainly not millions of dollars, just enough to sort of scrape by. Maybe my plan was to go to like Key West and buy a little bar and hope that I didn't go broke drinking bourbon and rum all day long. I don't really know.
Right.
I guess we set goals and we don't really always think about actuating them, which is weird from somebody who's like set so many business goals. My personal life wasn't really a focus of mine until the last couple of years. So maybe the focus on making myself a better person and making sure I was surrounding myself with better people for me, that's an arbitrary metric, but better people from my point of view, sort of helped get me towards that goal. I can't tell you what I would have done if this hadn't happened, because it didn't happen. So I just feel very lucky and very blessed to be where I'm at and you know, have been able to capitalize on what for a lot of people is not a good occurrence.
Yeah, I'm glad that you said that, because I'm one of those that felt blessed in 2022. I mean, the whole world changed. You know, some people call it the apocalypse and what have you. Everything is different now than it was just 2 years ago. But I've been an entrepreneur most of my life. I've been listening to good counsel from people for a long time. And so when everything shut down, my life wasn't really disrupted that much. My wife was out of work for a couple months, and you know, she went through her phase of depression and everything like that. And I'm just like, it'll be all right. We can take care of it. Luckily, she was able to go back to the restaurant, and her boss is like very loose on the restrictions. You know, she doesn't have to wear a mask or anything like that. That preparedness for catastrophe is really what I think is important to know. And I'm glad that you shared that with me, because when things do, and they will continue going forward, hit the fan, you know, the proverbial shit hitting the fan, you know, having that preparedness so life doesn't just like sweep you on your ass and you're caught off guard, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think some of that is, you know, for me anyway, it's growing up scrappy in the 80s and 90s. Like it's probably the 90s was the last real free decade. And, you know, we could get into, if you want to, the ramifications and consequences of that. Maybe it wasn't always, or it wasn't all as positive an outcome as we saw at the time or we remember. But the kind of the scrappiness of growing up in that time and a little bit of military training and in the restaurant industry, you learn really quick to, you know, react on the fly, fix things that are broken without a lot of help. You know, you might be dealing with 300 customers, you know, 10 of them need something at once, half of them are hammered. You learn how to prioritize, how to think quick. And maybe for me, what it was with COVID was that in my personal life, I had to think quick for the first time in a long time. Like I got very comfortable in the restaurant world, you know, relatively well-known, at least in the States, if not a little bit of Europe, like relatively well-known. And then I had a huge break with that community when COVID hit. You know, I was saying things that were not generally accepted by that group of people. You know, bartending, craft bartending, the restaurant, it tends to be a very progressive, you know, socially progressive industry, which I'm totally fine with socially progressive, but that manifested itself, as I'm sure you and your listeners know, into a very like COVID crazy culty thing. And I wasn't looking at it that way. And I realized like how quickly these people were abandoning me. And then rather than look at that as like I'm losing all my friends, I looked at it as, well, what a freeing moment. Like I'm no longer held down to, you know, conform to this. I no longer care what anybody here thinks about me. I get to do what I want to do and not have to worry about the consequences of it. So there's a lot of that too, you know, and again, it's about what you're looking for and what you've kind of trained yourself to do when something comes out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. You know, I hesitate to like give people advice because I don't know their situation. I can only tell you what I did. But I think I was like trained and tuned to thinking in the moment that happened. My industry was like, you know, literally shut down. I mean, you saw it, your listeners saw it. We couldn't work for 2 months. In those particular types of situations where there's something devastating or life-threatening or immediate that I have to react to, I do very well in those situations. And I think I needed that to break myself out of this sort of comfort zone that I'd been in for the better part of a decade and a half, which I've talked about as well too. It also broke me out of my mental and spiritual comfort zone, or my libertarian comfort zone. And all of that was really important to kind of move this dialogue forward and try to, I feel like I've been playing catch up with, you know, my life, where I was sort of involved in asking questions and being a little philosophical and a little practical, but I was so focused on one thing and one thing in particular that now I feel like I'm rushing to catch up and making some mistakes along the way. And, you know, but this is what I do. This is what I do in the moment, is make mistakes, react, try to be proactive, you know, do better the next time, apologize if I do something stupid. It's just, I'm tuned to it. So I don't know if that's a trait that people should work on, or if it isn't, or it's just me. I don't know. I can only like share with you how I benefited from it. Again, I feel lucky and blessed to be in that position. So,
well, one of the things, Adam, I got to be honest, I respect you about, is that you do ask the right questions. You know, there's a lot of stuff going on. I'm going to differentiate Liberty podcast world and Liberty Twitter world, right? Because, you know, I think Twitter is much more toxic than the podcast, at least the ones I listen to, because people who have podcasts or who are featured on podcasts, they're the ones asking questions. I believe it was Mark Clare. I don't want to misquote him, but he said that, you know, from all the stuff that happened in 2020, if you're not looking at life differently for the last year and a half than you did prior to that, then you're really not living. Because there's a lot of people out there who just kind of stuck in this, okay, it's still 2019 world, and or maybe we're going back to the 2019 world. And I think you and I can probably agree that we're not going to go back to that direction. So asking the right questions about, you know, your personal goals, your life goals, your spiritual goals, things of that nature, I think that everybody should be doing that if they're not already.
Yeah. And well, I mean, not everybody should be doing it like in front of the entire world. Or, you know, even in front of a few thousand people, because I try to keep this in perspective. I mean, even the most popular libertarian podcast is not really known by most people who exist.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm under no illusion, even though I'm not trying to be, even if I was trying to promote this, make money off of this, become popular, I'm under no illusion that really, at the end of the day, no one is listening to me, right? Like I might reach a few thousand people an episode. I might interact with like 12 of them personally. So like, I am aware of my place in the world. I'm aware that I'm not going to change the world. And I'm aware that when I'm on Twitter, most people of consequence are not paying attention to me. And so I've always said with Twitter or Facebook or Instagram or any social media, you should be using it purposefully. And I've always said this for years and years. And if you're not using it purposefully, what it's doing is becoming detrimental to yourself. So I've used it in the past for messaging and marketing my businesses or myself. Twitter, I mean, I joined Twitter in like 2013, but I only started using it last year, maybe around this time, maybe in the summer. And I didn't know how to use it. Like I tried a couple different iterations of, you know, trying to get known on there or familiar on there. And then I realized like, what am I, just be yourself, just go on there and do what you always do, which is be honest and talk to people and see what happens. You know, I think if you're not using it purposefully, it's going to be really harmful. And if you are using it purposefully, I think it's important to be humble and try to understand that unless you're some troll and you know you have a fake profile picture and you're on there specifically to disrupt the system, I totally respect that. That's totally purposeful. But if you are you on Twitter, I think a little humility, a lot of questions, maybe not so many answers, not being so sure of yourself, is that's just what I am anyway. I think that tends to attract a lot of people who I want to be around. And I don't want to sell a version of myself that isn't true and attract a bunch of people that, you know, if I were to revert to being honest, I'm going to lose them because I'm not, you know, generating honesty from the rip. So I've made some mistakes on there for sure. a couple pretty big ones that I managed to, well, one of them seemed like a mistake. It had a purpose. It didn't really go the way I wanted it to go, and kind of like, okay, I'll give in, my bad. And I think, you know, I don't care what people think about that, but I do try to convey the honesty of it, or the fact that I, you know, made a mistake, or I feel I made a mistake. And at the end of the day, you just can't take it personal. You don't really know a lot of these people personally. You don't know what their motivations are. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm on Twitter like 10 minutes a day total. I time myself. It used to be 15. Now it's down to like 5 or 10, depending on the day. And then I put it down. I don't look at it. You know, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. And I scroll through in the morning, see what's worth paying attention to and not paying attention to. And then move on with my life, you know, and I don't know, that's not what everybody does. Certainly some people spend a lot of their time on there promoting themselves or their business or their show or their ideas. I don't know. I've done that so much in my personal life that I don't get a lot of gratification out of it. So I will interact with people. I think like, oh, this is a cool conversation. Right. You know, like I'd like to learn something from this. And I'll take it as far as it becomes healthy. And then if it stops being healthy, I'll just stop having it because whatever, turn the phone off and go do something else. Right, so again, I don't know if that works for everybody, but that's just kind of been my system.
So, well, I definitely agree with a lot with what you're saying there. I'm not very popular on Twitter because I never liked Twitter. I always thought it was toxic. It was negative. I just didn't understand the format. And it wasn't until after doing this podcast for about 6 or 8 months that I realized, well, shoot, everybody who listens to podcasts is on Twitter. So I might as well try to make some kind of presence on there just so I can get a little bit more popularity with the podcast. But I think probably where you and I connect the most and the way I reached out to you is my philosophy for starting the podcast in general is just going back to Jason Stapleton's program. I think I found you on a Nomad Network. And I'm going to have a commercial for that because I really think I'd rather spend more of my time on that network because it's a lot more positive environment. You get to know a lot of creators, you know, podcasters, artists, entrepreneurs, and people who are actually moving in a direction of, you know, that's going to actually accomplish something rather than just putting out just BS arguments and stating the same old crap that everyone else talks about in a, you know, in a different setting.
Yeah. And, you know, I joined it relatively early. I mean, it's only been around for a little bit. And, you know, I'd been listening to Jason's show since, man, I moved to Seattle in what, 2015? And I started listening to him on the drive out there. I'm not sure how I got to it exactly, but that was back. It was the Jason Stapleton. It was before the Jason Stapleton program. It was called something, the Daily Show. It was the something show. And then he rebranded as the Jason Stapleton program. And he was on with, I want to say his name was Aaron, but I don't think that's who it was. It was like the, what Matt does now is what this guy did.
Yeah.
And then Matt came on. I kind of missed that a little bit in the shuffle. Yeah, I was in the Facebook group for a long time. And then he rebranded as Wealth, Power, and Influence. And I was one of the few people who really enjoyed that rebranding. And a lot of people didn't. And they were like incredibly virulent against him. Like they went hard. And, you know, I had Jason, I invited Jason early on last year onto my show. And he was nice enough to do it where we kind of talked a little bit about that because that was something that, you know, started watering the seed of what it is that this libertarian community, this liberty community is actually doing. Mm-hmm. A lot of people didn't see it at the time. A lot of people are starting to see it now. But, you know, I don't know if they really are or if they think they are or they're just aligning in the moment. Like, I'm not really sure. But I really like the message of, you know, individual responsibility, making sure, you know, your house is in order before you go judging someone else's. And certainly that gets interpreted as, well, if you're rich, you can do whatever you want. You know, interpret things however you want to interpret them. That's your job, is to interpret stuff, right? Like people can say things, but if you say, well, he's saying X, it's like, no, you're hearing X. You don't know really what somebody's saying. what you're hearing is what you're hearing. There's no way, there's like literally no way to crawl into somebody's brain and really understand what they're saying. So I've always like looked at that as it's tapping into my entrepreneurial potential. It's making me self-reliant. It's moving me in a position where I'm not dependent on others, but it's also helping me understand my responsibility to my family, my community, my peers, coworkers, friends, that if I'm not contributing something of value to them, then I shouldn't be expecting to get anything in return. Right. And I think there's a libertarian disconnect there where it's like, well, I have rights and I'm owed these rights because Mises or Rothbard. And it's like, okay, like, are you? Because I haven't really seen you contribute anything of value to the world. And sure, I'm not going to like beat you up, but I am going to ignore you because I don't know what value you're giving me. So I, you know, I think a lot of what Jason is saying, and again, this is my interpretation. He might not be saying this, but this is what I'm hearing, is you shouldn't be expecting anything from anybody else. Nobody's looking out for you. You have control of your life. You have responsibility within your existence to do what you need to do to make yourself the best human being you can be. Now that might be fucking be a billionaire, or it might be just be comfortable enough to live homeless on a beach in Key West. But you know, you have to know that and you have to understand that and explore that regardless of what other people think about you. And there's a lot of humility there that you can get from Jason's message and many other people's messages, by the way. But that humility, I think, is it's hard to hear that from somebody who's telling you how to be successful, right? And he is selling a product, and many people are selling products to you. And so it's like, well, you're telling me to be humble, you're telling me to be responsible, but yet you are selling me this course. Like, I have to pay $300 to hear this. Like, what are you, some discount Tony Robbins? And it's like, well, dude, like when you go to the grocery store, do you say like, oh, it's $3 for milk? Are you serious? Don't you know I need milk? $3? What are you, some like discount cow guy, farmer? Like, what, you know, like the disconnect there is so weird. Like, no one's telling you you need to buy that product. No one's telling you that you need to listen to Jason. So just don't listen to him. Or, you know, if you think you have a better way, well, present that, present the better way. Like, why cut people down and tear them down? You know, what is he, like a grifter? Like, whatever, like, who cares? But how does that affect your life? You know? So, anyway, the too long didn't read of that is I got a lot of value out of listening to what Jason said. I got a lot of value listening to what people like Pete Quinones and Matt Erickson and Vin Armani said, you know, Buck, Mark Claire, like everyone in that circle, I've gotten a lot of value out of, you know, again, though, this is my journey. I may or may not be part of their journey, and I'm happy to continue this with everyone as long as we're on the same path. But at the end of the day, I owe myself and my family, I owe them my story and my journey. And I don't really owe anyone else anything. And because of that, I don't expect anything from anybody. I think that's just become a blind spot in libertarian circles. And people can hear that and they might think it's a shitty thing to say, or some people hear it and they think it's an awesome thing to say. Like, again, I don't know. And I don't spend a lot of time thinking about it. I don't stay up at night worrying about it. I just focus on being the best Adam that I can be. And that's it. That's where my head's at. Like, some people have called me an asshole for that. And some people have written me like tear filled letters. So what can you do? You know, well, just you.
You know, I think that you and I share this perspective, since we're both podcasters, that there is an expectation that our audience probably has. And, you know, if you're in the podcast world, you probably listen to more than just one or two shows. You know, I listen to dozens of shows at any given time. I'll put something on and I'll grab a little something from every show I listen to, a little perspective. Like you said, I want to be the best Mike I can be. And one thing that resonated with me with Jason's message years ago, and he's always like, you know, you have to take control of your own destiny. You can't just expect that the world is going to treat you the way you expect to be treated, because it's not. It's going to beat you up. It's going to chew you up. It's going to throw you out. And you have to go out there and you have to go after the things you want. You have to set your goals. You have to have that mindset that you're in control of your destiny and not everybody else, you know? And
yeah, man. And like, you know, not to interrupt you, but I mean, ancient humans, ancient civilizations that go back thousands of years, like they didn't just understand this. This was like the primordial drive for their entire culture, mm-hmm. was understanding that. And we live in this very comfortable, privileged, you know, post-enlightenment stage of shiny shit and no meaning, where like what you're saying is going to sound profound to people, but it's really like what we're living in now is an anomaly, right? It's abnormal for how humans got here. Mm-hmm. And we're standing on the shoulders of these great civilizations that we call backwards now, right? Like, oh, you lived in the Middle Ages? Like, oh, you were living in the desert? Like biblical times? You know how much like rape and murder happens in the Bible? What a bunch of backwards people who couldn't live in this peaceful world that we inhabit now. And it's like, yo, you're standing on the shoulders of these people who got you here, mm-hmm. and not even like with the thankfulness to acknowledge how much work went into creating that, right? Like we're just taking for granted that we're so much smarter now. And I don't know about you, but like, I look around at the post-COVID world and I'm like, yo, you've seen the movie Idiocracy, I'm sure. I just watched it this past weekend with my girlfriend. She'd never seen it before. And it was just amazing to watch her face as it just literally plays out what's happened over the last 2 years. Right, written like 10 years ago, but with a focus on this, like, how dumb are we as a culture? Like, we're fucking lost, bro.
Right. And
we don't look back to realize that this, you know, the reason that we had culture and traditions and symbolism and religion and spirituality, coming of age rituals, like the reason those things existed was for human beings to survive a cold and dark and terrible world that was trying at every instance to kill them. Mm-hmm. And here we are, the product of all of that work, wasting away the product of all of that labor. And it's once you see it, it's so hard to unsee it. It's devastating, but it also, you realize how easy it is to go to like the map store of history and grab the guide that can fix all of this for you, mm-hmm. right? You're not going to fix it for everyone or maybe even anyone else, but there's so many guides, there's so many maps. And it's funny, if you don't mind me telling you a quick story, I feel like every anecdotal story I tell on any show always involves Best Buy. And I don't know why that is.
All right.
But there's another Best Buy story. So I'm in there like, I don't know, it's before COVID, maybe like 2018 something. And I'm buying some shit or whatever. And I'm standing in line and the two, you know, jokers behind the counter at the register are, you know, playing around with something on their phone. And the girl looks up at the people standing in line. I'm like second in line. And she's like, MapQuest? Like, who uses MapQuest? I guess the guy had the MapQuest app on his phone. And she's like, does anybody remember MapQuest? And I looked around and I was like the oldest person in there by far. And like, I'm not old. I don't think I'm like almost 40, but I'm not old. And I was like, I don't know. I remember maps. Mm-hmm. Like we went to the store, we bought a map and it told us where to go. And if it was wrong, you were just fucking lost. Right. Like,
right.
That was only, dude, that was like 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. Right. That's not like fucking 2000 years ago. Like we've progressed so far and people just forget that all of these tools are there. And you know, I don't know how we got on this or how I got on this tangent, but I hope it was relevant to your question.
Well, you know, I don't really ask many questions if you haven't realized by now. I just kind of shoot this shit. It's interesting because you keep bringing up work. And, you know, I think what the shows and people that I really follow, the influencers or the thought leaders of today's modern conversation, I think, are the ones who are looking at tradition, who are looking at history, who are not just confined to, you know, a couple of books that they read, but they're saying, okay, there's a lot here. Now, I'm going to publicly declare something. I've never read Rothbard ever. And I know I can argue libertarianism with just about anybody. But as like I study, you know, I'm a Christian, so I'll study scriptures, or you know, I'll study history, or I've listened to a whole bunch of people talk about a bunch of stuff, and so I get the concept of liberty. But at the end of the day, I see these conversations where like, okay, well, you're not a pure libertarian because you're not, you know, following the principles in this one book that somebody reads. And I'm like, I'm living by 2,000 years of human history. I understand human nature. I understand behaviors, and I understand what drives people to things. And there's a lot of work into that. Maybe it's also because I'm older too. I'm going to be 44 this month. So it's like, I have life experience that I don't need to sit there and worry about what Rothbard or what Mises said. And so like, I distance myself from these conversations where, you know, it's just not interesting to me. It's like, okay, like you, I want to ask the real questions that, you know, are going to provide answers that are satisfactory for myself, my wife, my family, my children. And, you know, I can't find it in some of these limited conversations that are out there. So that's why I really like this conversation, this ongoing conversation with people like you and Ben Armani and Matt Erickson, because you're asking deeper questions that have more importance to life, you know?
Yeah, man. And I only speak for me personally. I'm asking questions because I'm looking for answers. You know, there are certainly people who are asking questions and want to keep asking questions, going all the way through question world and never really get answers. I think actually the answers are pretty simple. And I mean, I have read Rothbard. I have read Mises. I remember select pieces of it, of them, of different things here and there. I couldn't recite it for you the same way I couldn't like recite the Bible to anybody. But I remember things how I remember them. And I try to reinforce that by listening to other people's interpretation. And then I'll go back and I'll read, you know, certain chapters or something. But like, you know, I think we have to be, or my thought process is, I have to be very careful who I let influence my decision making. And it's not something I thought about for a long time. But what I realized through the last, you know, 18 to 20 months was a lot of the ideas that are encompassed in what we would call libertarianism really just sort of evolved with, you know, half a dozen academics sitting around Murray Rothbard's living room. And they were not really ever meant to touch our lips, right? They wrote stuff. It's like if I, you know, created my entire worldview around somebody who'd written three or four COVID studies and said, okay, this is going to be my entire worldview now. I'm a COVIDian or whatever, you know, and that's not to say that what Rothbard and Mises and Hayek and these guys were writing isn't appealing, because it certainly sounds like it is, but it's just a thing. It's just a way. It's a way. And when I looked at, you know, why is the idea of individual liberty and economic freedom so unappealing to so many people, I started looking back at where libertarianism really originated. Like, yeah, maybe it originated with Rothbard. Sure, like our modern anarcho-capitalist idea, or, you know, maybe it came from Protestant fundamentalism or a reaction to it, or maybe that came from deism or the ideas of the French Revolution and Jefferson, or what was that in reaction to? Like, was that in reaction to, you know, Descartes and like ideas of the early Enlightenment? And like, what was that in a reaction to, you know, the Protestant Reformation? What was that in a reaction to, you know, the Catholic Church being a bunch of like self-serving materialistic assholes and not doing their job, like as spiritual guides, religious guides for humanity, like fucking up as humans tend to do. Mm-hmm. Right. And then the next, always the reaction to that is always the fix. They're always selling you the Band-Aid, right? So to me, it was like, well, what is libertarianism? What is it trying to sell me the Band-Aid for? Like, can I go back far enough where I can actually see the source of the wound and actually heal it without the Band-Aid? Because that seems to me like that's a more productive use of my time, rather than just say, well, you know, here's what a guy in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s wrote. Well, let's just stay there because, you know, history started then, right? Like history started in the 50s. I don't know if you know. Or history started with the American Revolution, or history started with whatever,
The 1619 project, right?
Sure, man. Like, you know, pick a time that isn't like the late Neolithic. And, you know, people who live in 2021 think that history started then.
Right.
And, you know, again, like I mentioned earlier, you know, human beings have been around for, you know, tens of thousands of years. And what we're living through now is a total historical, cultural, societal anomaly. So is that good? Is that bad? I don't know. But I know that it's not normal. And it looks to me like it's failing on a fucking like high level. And you mentioned like technology a little bit earlier. We focus on social media, but we didn't really get into tech specifically. I mean, technology is just a tool, right? Like you can have a hammer in your hand and you can go try to build a doghouse with your hammer, mm-hmm. or you can go bash your neighbor's brains in, right? Like kill their whole family with the hammer. It's not the hammer's fault. So like, is it Twitter's fault? Is it the internet's fault? Is it, you know, cybersecurity? Is it the automobile? Is this like a bad thing that we've invented? Certainly, like maybe we're not biologically or mentally ready for the technology that we've created, but we could learn to be. Like, we're not stupid, and you know, we could figure it out. There's plenty of people that use tech for what I would consider to be good. Not everybody has to go like Ted Kaczynski.
Right.
I mean, he certainly predicted what he felt like the masses would do in this particular situation, which, like, honestly, the Bible tells you the same thing Kaczynski was telling you, like right. what not to do, because it will lead you down a path of darkness. Their technology was a little bit less complicated than what, you know, Uncle Ted was talking about. But that doesn't mean that you can't, you know, use it for good. It doesn't mean that you shouldn't like use a fork and a knife. Just because you have hands doesn't make a fork and a knife bad technology, right? So I just think a lot of that, you know, is important to keep in perspective and not latch on to like X good, Y bad, mm-hmm. and open yourself up and allow yourself to explore the potential opportunities that, you know, we learn as we grow as a species, but not to like just assume everything that's handed to you is good. And not everything that's handed to you is bad, or whatever good and bad even fucking means. Like, who even knows what that means to each individual? It just seems to me like, rather than be humble and explore that idea, you know, it's a lot more advantageous in the minute to just sell somebody the answer and hope that it's clever enough to get you like 20, 30,000 Twitter likes. And then you can tell everyone how like super important you are. And then what is it really? It's all about you. So what have you really done? Just contributed to the problem. You know,
mm-hmm. Yeah. So I had Jason on from the 2-Bit podcast. I had an extended conversation. One of the things I thought that he said is that was pretty profound. He said a lot of people are out there just speaking to make noise. You know, and like you said, are you really adding value to people's lives just sitting there arguing or complaining or, you know, selling your idea of what liberty means or what freedom means and not really putting the work in to achieve that kind of stuff. You can't sell any. I mean, you've been in sales, you've been an entrepreneur in business. You can't provide a product or an idea unless you've already experienced that, unless you already know what it is. And I think there's just lots of people out there who are just talking to make noise. They want to be heard. They want to come across as halfway intelligent, or, you know, some autistic types want to be very intelligent, but you know, they're not really selling a product that they live themselves. And so I'm just like, no wonder why it's unappealing. You know, I tell this to my wife all the time. I go, libertarianism hasn't won anything in 50 years because it doesn't have any solutions to anybody. It's just a bunch of noise that, you know, people think they know it means what it means, but it doesn't provide any answers. And so I think that the questions we need to ask is, how are we going to actually get more liberty, more freedom, more prosperity in our own lives is the most important thing. And now there's a term for that going on Twitter, and people are arguing about that too now.
What's that?
Well, people argue about the WPI strategy. People argue about the post-libertarian strategy. You know, people are like, well, that's not the way that, you know, it is. And I'm all like, well, how are you going back to what we started with, Adam? And how, you know, how are you contributing to solve any problem that you perceive in the world?
Well, I mean, I should probably stop you there, because if somebody's goal is to change the world or fix the world or, you know, analyze problems in the world, like, well, then you'd better have like the capability to do that. Like, are right. you Elon Musk? I mean, are you out there? Are you that guy who actually could do that? And then if you are, like, man, you better be really fucking careful what you do with that responsibility, because you're playing like you're literally playing God. And there's a whole fucking book that tells about what happens if you don't do that shit with a little bit of humility. Mm-hmm. Right. So I don't know if people should be focused on changing the world, because at the end of the day, that sounds like that's all about them. Mm-hmm. Right. And when I look at most people, and this could just be the manager marketer in me, like constantly analyzing people and trying to figure out if they're like a good fit for what I'm doing, or if they're good for a personal relationship or a business relationship for me to have with them, that so few people are focused on learning what value they can contribute to others that makes them feel like they're a really good human being inside. And that's also very subjective, but a lot of people are focused on how can I make money quick? How can I get known by people quick? How can I get popular? That whole drive to like change the world is a very selfish drive. It's a very non-humble drive. And I'm not saying that it's always necessarily coming from a bad place, because you can contribute to a lot of really negative externalities and consequences coming from a very genuinely good place, right? Without understanding what you're doing. I think a lot of the, you know, American or Western ideas of individual liberty and economic freedom are very well-intentioned, but don't actuate well when it comes to how they're actually implemented, perceived, or accepted. And so I'm not saying everybody who says they want to change the world is like the fucking Antichrist or whatever, but I think it's very important to that's not your focus. Mm-hmm. Right? That you don't wake up in the morning and think, man, my whole goal in life is to change the world. And my experience with people who have that as a goal is that they tend to be pretty not put together in their own world. And I was actually having this conversation with somebody on Signal today. I was talking about how I know a lot of people who they're very involved in like the spiritual world, like the universe, man, kind of thing, right? Mm-hmm. So like the burn the sage and like get in touch with the mother goddess earth, and you know, you have to use this many beads to pray this mantra, and it's going to give us like really good karma and shit. And my experience with a lot of those people, and also a lot of like really fundamentalist like Protestant religious people, is they're all like really fucked up. Like they have a lot of like drug issues, alcohol issues, possession issues, relationship issues. They tend to be like really destructive in their personal lives. It's really hard for them to get out of their own way. They're very egotistical, very self-centered. They're always trying to get you to do like the bead thing and the universe man thing, right? And it's like, it all becomes about them and like a coping mechanism. And I'm very distrustful of that. You see this a lot in the like born again faith, or, you know, Protestant fundamentalist homeschooling world. Like I have a very good friend that came up with me in the 90s that was part of that like born again homeschooling world. Like her entire family's fucked up for decades from that. Mm-hmm. Right. That's not like being anti-homeschool. It's like when you can't realize the world that you're coping with this other thing, you're projecting it on everybody else as like the way for them to be better. And it's like, well, I don't like need that, any of that stuff. I'm just totally fine without any of it. And they're like, well, you're just bringing negative energy. And I'm like, yeah, but you're like doing like Xanax 4 times a day, like beating your fucking spouse, like dropping out of school and like waving sage in the air. Like, really? Yeah. Like, really? Like I need to do that? I don't know, man. Like I don't feel like I do.
I think that's the number one turnoff that people have when it comes to just religion in general. Not that sure. The message or the tradition isn't good, because I believe it is, but it is that need to proselytize, that I need to spread the message out. But you know, the greatest way to spread any kind of message is to live the message by example. Mm-hmm. To be somebody that people want to emulate. You know, I don't need to force a message down people's throat. I just need to live the life, and people will just come to you. Hey, you know, you seem to be happy. You seem to be, you know, doing pretty well. How'd you do it? And they literally, they'll just come up to you and ask you rather than you having it, or, you know, a person having a need to say, this is how you should do it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this whole thing with, you know, I listened to a guy by the name of Brian McClanahan. I don't know if you've heard of him or not, but he's a historian. And my brother actually lived in the South for several years. So there's a word for it that they call in the South. They call it Yankees, people who want to actually, you know, tell you how to live. And it goes back to Puritanism, right? You know, this is how you live. If you're not living like us, then you're doing wrong. And my friend called it the other day. He said it's like the fun gobblers, right? If anyone's not living life or they're having fun somewhere, then we got to step in and say, you're not doing it right. And it's the same kind of thing. It's like, you know, you don't need to proselytize. You don't need to sit there and spread a message of anything. Just live it. Just do it. Go out there and be an example. And, you know, people will come to you and say, hey, there's something different about you. What's that about?
Yeah, man. And, you know, I understand the atheists and even the new atheists when they, you know, rail against religion and they can point to all of the either atrocities or stupidities that, you know, organized religions have committed over the centuries or millennia. I totally understand that. I mean, people are people. Like, we're flawed individuals. We make fucking huge mistakes. I think it's a mistake to, you know, internalize what an individual did or a group of individuals did rather than what's the story. What's the message? Does the message work? You know? And I was having the same conversation with somebody last night, this like dead. I know like comedians always say like, oh, yesterday, but I was literally having this conversation last night with somebody. And I was like, you know, just because someone you don't like is telling you a message doesn't mean the message isn't true. Mm. Right. Like that person can be off-putting. That person could actually be like genuinely evil, but they might, you know, slip up and say something to you that makes total fucking sense. And you're not going to hear it because you're judging them for who they are. Right. And so I think it's important not to have this like, you know, guttural reaction to what human beings do and look a little bit beyond that into what actually works, what actually saves us, what actually grows us. Those ideas are not worth throwing out just because flawed human beings have fucked up their implementation, you know, over the millennia. And, you know, I might say something here that resonates with somebody who fucking hates me. Like, good. Like, I hope that's true. I hope it does resonate. I hope that they do more with it than I've done with it, because that's going to help them be a better human being later. And I do think there's like a single way to do this. I just don't exactly know what that is yet, but I'm sort of getting there. It's when you look at, you know, what the new atheists are reacting to, the Protestant fundamentalists who are, you know, reacting to the deists who are reacting to, like, you just follow it back and you're like all of you lost your way. Mm-hmm. All of you lost your way. And I can kind of pinpoint like the 100 years or so where that kind of all started. And then you're like, okay, well, in the Middle Ages, what did the church do? What did the Catholic Church do? What did the Catholic Church do that the Orthodox Church didn't do? And start questioning that, following that backwards. Like, where did the message get lost? You take it all the way back to the beginning. And that message still resonates. It's still important. It still hits you on a certain level if you let it. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter who's saying it to you. So for me, that's, I don't know. I think that's the best way to look at any idea. Look at it on its face, trace it back as far as you can go. And, you know, language, religion, communication, right? It's all just a technology. If that technology has lasted thousands and thousands of years, maybe it's a good technology. So,
well, I don't want to go off on a tangent here, but when you were talking, I was just thinking about reality and, you know, there's this idea of postmodernism and, you know, everyone has their own search for truth. And one thing I hate more than anybody is when people say, well, that's your truth or that's my truth. It's like, no, there's just one truth, but maybe we interpret it differently. But that's just, you know, you can trace it back historically. You can pinpoint it somewhere. And I don't think anybody has the perfect answer, but I think that there is an answer or an ideal for just to live this life and make it through. Every single one of us, we have our own interpretation, but at the end of the day, we still got to live this life and get through it somehow. And evolve with each other, you know, without tearing each other apart. And that's what's going on in the world today. Everyone wants to just tear each other idea apart instead of like listening to each other. Why don't you just listen and learn something from somebody that even if you disagree with them?
Yeah. Or maybe another way to do it is just to ignore the fuck out of everybody. You know, like I don't know. I mean, I don't necessarily know if like everyone is worth listening to. So yeah, you might be right. I mean, certainly I think focusing on humility is a good way to go about really any endeavor. And listen, we're humans. We're going to fuck up. Like I've done it a million times. I just did it like a couple weeks ago. I fucked up on humility. I was brazen and egotistical and didn't react. I had a goal and I just didn't do it. I didn't actuate my workings toward that goal in a way that was centered or aligned with my purpose. You know, I used like a sales technique that I wasn't comfortable with and it wasn't right. And it's very important to be humble about those things because we don't really know. Like you mentioned postmodernism, right? Like I'm very amenable to postmodernism. And not because I think that postmodernism is necessarily a good idea, but I like the fact that they're questioning modernism because I also do that. Now they're not really drawing any conclusions, which is why so many of them end up like being thrown out, like throwing themselves out of windows and miserable and drug addicted. But I think questioning things that you don't understand is probably a necessary step to finding truth. I don't think postmodernism gives you truth, but I do think the idea of questioning modernity is important because I don't think necessarily that modernity is a good place for us to be. So I am like empathetic or sympathetic to postmodern thinking. I think some very good ideas came out of there. I just think they weren't where they were going. If they were going anywhere, isn't aligned with where I'm going. But then again, I'm not necessarily going in the same direction that modernists are going.
Right.
So you listen, you pull out what you need to pull out. You try to leave the human impetus at the door and learn and grow. And again, I can't stress enough how important it is to remind yourself. Like I'm going to show you on my phone, dude. I put this on here. I don't know if you could see it. It's the story of Icarus and the wings.
Okay.
Oh, I can't see it, but I always have some iteration of that story from mythology on my phone where, you know, he flies too close to the sun and the wings of wax and feathers melt and he falls to his death because he was flying too high. I think that's always a good reminder for people. Like it's a good story. It's told for a reason, mm-hmm. right? It's made up. Like it didn't really happen, but it's still a good fucking story. So, you know, we look at like myths and we call them lies, but really they're all of the ancients. They kind of knew these things. Like we're going back thousands of years to that lesson. You know, we didn't learn that 200 years ago. So there's a lot there. There's a lot there in our past that I think we're ignoring because we think we're so much more evolved. And sure, I think that's a big mistake.
Yeah. Like you used the word myth and I tried to explain that word to a friend of mine and he thought just like you were saying that myth means lie. I look at mythology, it's just a story. It probably has some truth in it. It probably has some exaggerations or some things that didn't necessarily happen, but just like the word fable, right? There's lessons in there. And I think that we can all learn them. But anyway, Adam, it's been about an hour. I don't want to take up too much of your evening, but what is your path forward? I mean, obviously we talked about answering questions, you know, what are you doing to create that life? If you can sum it up, to really create that life that you want, that path that you want going forward, what is it you're looking for the most right now?
So my ultimate goal is to, especially now that COVID sort of chased me out of brick and mortar stores, which I've always liked, mobile income is certainly important for me. I don't need very much. I don't have very many things. You know, we've accumulated some things because my girlfriend likes stuff, but at the end of the day, it's not stuff that we couldn't afford to lose. So I like the idea of income mobility, that we could do what we do from anywhere on the planet at any time with a lot of fluctuation in market value. So, you know, I don't want to get too much into what I do for a living currently, but it's very adaptable to a lot of different changes in socioeconomic and political culture. Like it's very easy for me to adapt. I like that. I think I like doing what I do because it provides value to people and it helps them get into, you know, better opportunities for themselves. And it makes me feel very good to do that. It makes me feel good to, you know, look at, you know, person A and person B and help them find the commonalities in a relationship that can make both of them more prosperous in the long run. That makes me feel really good. And really all I'm doing is introducing them and helping them highlight their own strengths and weaknesses to get to know each other better. So it's like being a counselor with actual productive value, you know, whereas like counseling doesn't really work because you can't be honest with people when you're counseling them. You have to kind of let them figure it out on their own. So I kind of take people who are looking for work and people who have work that are looking for someone to do work, and I match them up. And there's a lot of value in that for me. I think I currently feel that it's a good way to provide value and feel comfortable that I'm doing something I can believe in based on my values. Cause we all have to live. And as much as I do have the training to go out and live in the woods forever, I don't necessarily want to do that. So I don't know, that's kind of it. Like I can do what I do from anywhere. I'm learning and growing. I'm trying to be a better person. I'm trying to be more religious, more spiritual. I'm trying to learn from as many people as I can and talk to as many people as I can. And, you know, one of the things you learn through that process is sometimes you have to shed people from your life. And part of the growth process and part of being true to you is trusting that you know when to do that and to do it gently and with a little humility. So I don't know what the future is going to hold, but I feel mentally, spiritually, that, you know, emotionally, like I'm in a good place to find out. So I hope people join on the journey. I hope they check in if I, you know, keep doing a show or if I'm, you know, lucky enough to be invited on to talk to folks like yourself. And people find value in that, then great. You know, I hope they do. I hope I can contribute something good while I'm here.
All right. Well, Adam, I really appreciate the conversation. I'm going to throw you for a loop with this question now, but I think after getting to know you a little bit better and some of the things that you're after and some of the questions you ask and things that you do to better yourself and those around you, see how you answer it. And that is, are you Invictus?
So I know that means something.
Well, let me interject. I normally prep people with a little sheet to give them.
No, I totally know it means something. I know because I've seen the movie. And then when you said that was the password to get into the show, I quick Googled it. So I'm like, I have to remember what that literally means in the context of like the Liberty world. So I totally did do that. I just don't fucking remember
Invictus what it means was. Unconquerable.
Unconquerable. Yeah. So, right. Okay. So, no, I don't know what that means necessarily. Like that was what I was thinking. Like I'm unconquerable in like what? And that's not the answer you're probably going to like, or your listeners are going to want to hear. It depends on what I'm doing, you know, like unconquerable in my quest to, you know, better myself and provide value and not let anyone tear me down or hold me back or, you know, stop me from doing that. But like, I'm certainly conquerable when it comes to my own ego and, you know, flaws that I have. I hope that people do stop me and teach me and help me through it. So in some ways, yeah, like I'm totally driven to make sure no one stands in my way. And in many other paths, I hope that people do stand in my way and push me along a better path if I'm on one that isn't good for me. So yeah, like, again, I don't know if that's the answer that you like, but that's what popped into my head when I quick Googled that word last week.
You know, that's a good enough answer for anything. I think one of the things you exemplified, a word that you used several times in this conversation, is humility. And I like that word too. So, you know, having humility is, you know, I think part of that equation, but we'll leave it at that. So
fair enough.
Once again, Adam, I appreciate the conversation and, you know, I wish you the best of luck and I'm sure we'll run into each other in the future.
Well, I appreciate it, man. Thank you. And yeah, I hope we do.
I want to thank everyone for listening to the show. I want to thank Adam for joining us. We are on a roll again, and I have lined up some great guests for the next couple of weeks. So if you've enjoyed this program, please subscribe to wherever you check out your favorite podcasts. Help me grow this show by sharing with three of your friends. And remember, until next time, stay productive, stay humble, and stay unconquerable. Have an awesome day. We'll see you soon.